Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass Piancy. I'm joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Mr. Bennett Tomlin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Cass?
Good. I wanted to talk about something that seemed kind of random when I brought it up, banking and cryptocurrency. We've talked about specific banks before. We've talked about Silvergate. I think we've talked about Moonstone to some extent. We've talked about a few other banks, Signature. We've talked about cryptocurrency struggling to get banking for any amount of time. However, lo and behold, as we were about to jump on to discuss this, a new article came out from CoinDesk by Ian Allison. It says, Bitstamp courts European banks as region's incoming crypto rules boost confidence. And the article goes into detail just kind of about how Bitstamp seems to be in talks with a bunch of banks to offer cryptocurrency, which if they're going to be offering cryptocurrency, you would think they would be partnering with the bank so that they could onboard clients, do deposits and withdrawals of fiat or whatever. So it looks like, at least in Europe, banks are starting to embrace this stuff. But part of the point of the article is also that the United States is on the other end of this and doesn't seem to be keen to move quickly and start accepting cryptocurrency exchanges as a client.
What's interesting to me about this article is that it's about Bitstamp potentially having banks in the future. Maybe in 3 to 6 months, Bitstamp says, we'll be able to announce at least one of the three banks that we're currently in talks with about them serving us. It is not a super immediate or super positive piece of news when you take it that way. Like, the fact that an entire article is dedicated to an executive from one cryptocurrency firm saying, we're talking to three banks, and maybe in 3 to 6 months we'll be able to announce something. The fact that that's news is itself a terrifying reflection of the current status of the cryptocurrency industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably true. However, at least Bitstamp sounds optimistic. We do know, for instance, that Coinbase, it seems like, at least to some degree, has never had banking issues the likes of which some of the other exchanges have seen. I don't know about Kraken. We know that Kraken and Coinbase have worked with some terrifying partners. For instance, Bitfinex, Crypto Capital Core. My point here is there still seem to be some crypto exchanges that are able to get banking and not lose it immediately.
So I think that's an interesting question, right? And we talked about that a little bit when Leo Schwartz was on in the context of Circle, because Circle is the largest US domiciled stablecoin. And over the last couple months has gone from like 8 banking partners down to 2. And during that same period, Coinbase has now taken their equity stake in Circle. And Coinbase themselves have had issues in the past, but they've generally been able to find new banking partners to replace those they lose pretty quickly. What I think is interesting, and something we haven't talked about much because the FTX news has been dominating so much, is that Coinbase is still facing that SEC lawsuit that alleges they're an unregistered securities exchange, as does Binance face their own SEC lawsuit, CFTC lawsuit, and all these other things. And so one of the things you wanted to discuss was where this is going to go in the future, especially in the United States. And so I think in the United States, we've seen a large number of banks stop servicing cryptocurrency companies. Since we started to see that, they've been given additional indications that this is a high-risk industry, right? Since they started doing that, FTX collapsed. Sam Bankman-Fried was arrested. Multiple executives of FTX have pled guilty to multiple felonies each. Coinbase has been sued by the SEC. Binance has been sued by the SEC. There has been additional reporting on charges waiting in the wings for Binance, etc. And Bitstamp, who represents, what, 1.25% of total global volume, may be optimistic that they've got new banking partners coming on in 3 to 6 months. But Binance, who is 68% of global volume, has been debanked from basically all of their European banking partners over the last couple months.
Right. Now, that's fair to say. I do want to say that, like, when you talk about the SEC, you're talking about civil lawsuits. You're talking about a regulatory regime that is not the one that people are necessarily super scared of anymore.
It's the one that makes bank compliance and risk officers go, this is not worth it.
I understand that. Here's some examples that I'm just going to quickly name off because I think it's a good frame of reference here, right? So we have BTCE, We have Mt. Gox. We have Quadriga CX. We have the hack from Bitfinex. We have the collapse of FTX. We have, I'm probably missing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 15, 20 more off the top of my head. But all of the ones that I'm mentioning were either criminal or close to criminal, like criminal adjacent, where I think people are going, oh, this isn't just a civil matter. This isn't just securities or unregistered securities or a civil regulatory regime coming down and saying something to you. This is far greater than that. This is the Department of Justice or an exchange owner possibly faking his death, or you know what I mean? Like, these are things that are just so much grander than the SEC saying you're being fined for $1 million.
Sure. But I think broadly, so like if we take it from its very beginning, right, we've got the OCC, the FDIC, and the Federal Reserve Board of President statements from almost a year ago at this point, which really sort of changed the way banks started to view the risk of cryptocurrencies. Since that time, we've had this entire series of collapses that has made cryptocurrency increasingly unappealing. We had bank failures in the United States, many of which were banks that serviced a disproportionately greater than average portion of cryptocurrency as part of their business. And so each and every single one of these things make it harder and harder for these banks to continue justifying servicing cryptocurrency. And the other kind of undercurrent to this is Coinbase and many of that type of firm have spent a lot of time advertising themselves as the legitimate alternative to places like FTX and Binance. And so regulators coming in and treating Coinbase as if it is not regulated or a serious alternative to those means when banks are trying to decide whether or not to service cryptocurrency companies, and even the one that was previously considered one of the most legitimate is now under this lawsuit, it becomes harder and harder to justify banking sub Coinbase level crypto firms.
Well, okay. So my pushback here, Protos published a piece about the SEC is suing Prager Matis, which is the auditor that helped audit FTX US or FTX. They aren't getting sued for that. They're not getting sued in relation to FTX. This is not related to that, but it is related to their SPACs, which special purpose acquisition companies. These were super popular. They're still happening, not to the degree that they were. And basically, Francine McKenna had the perspective of, we're seeing a similar problem in both the banking industry and the auditing industry, where what you have is you have the big major industry players, and they obviously can take on more risk than super duper small players because they have larger balance sheets, and paying fines and paying regulators comes with a part of doing business. But the issue that she's seen, and I tend to agree with this, and we saw it play out with Silicon Valley Bank and with First Republic and other regional banking services, is that these smaller providers also have to take more risk, it turns out, right? Because to even compete with the larger guys now, well, it means that you have to do the same kind of thing. So perhaps there is actually a willingness in these very small banks to take on smaller than Coinbase style exchanges, or to take on Coinbase, take on Gemini, take on Kraken, right? Right? Like, I don't know why, but it does seem like the risk profile is accepting of some of this stuff for these smaller community banks.
Well, and I think that makes a bit of sense, right? We've talked about in our coverage of Farmington elsewhere that, like, one of the big things that Janvier envisioned for the bank was that by taking on some of this activity, which they perceived as not as risky as their competitors did, they would be able to grow disproportionately fast. And it was working, and maybe could have continued working if, you know, they had told the Fed they were planning on doing this, or, you know, not been getting all their deposits from the same people who gave them the money to buy it. Whatever. That's not the point. I think you're right. The smaller banks are probably more likely to do that because that's their path towards no longer being a small bank. More broadly, though, what I think is interesting, and I'm going to tie this back to FTX and Alameda Research, is that the period where many cryptocurrency companies were able to get banking accounts seems kind of anomalous, right? Even 2019, 2020, FTX was not able to get a bank account. It wasn't really until 2021, right, that FTX Digital Markets finally got their bank account at Silvergate. And by 2022, Silvergate's gone. FTX is gone. Alameda Research is gone. Signature Bank is gone. Moonstone Bank is gone. Like, there was a 18-month period where it was reasonable for many of these large firms to actually get banking and not have to rely on shady payment processors, shadow banks, or money launderers. And that window seems to have kind of aggressively closed. There are still, yes, firms that have banking and firms that are going to continue to be able to access banking. And maybe Bitstamp is right that firms that have like gone through serious licensure will be able to continue to get bank accounts in Europe. I just want people to remember that that type of firm is a vanishingly small portion of the industry. Like I said, Bitstamp is like somewhere between like 1 and 3% of total spot volume. It is 1/20th or less of Binance. And so they kind of don't matter.
It's funny that you bring that up. I think part of the reason why I wanted to discuss this is yesterday I re-listened to the one single time where I was able to ask Sam Bankman-Fried a handful of questions. And the last question I was able to ask him was basically, can you help me understand how you moving money, accepting customer funds that are destined for FTX and you just send them to Alameda? Can you help me understand how that isn't wire fraud? And he goes, yeah, fine. Like, we have our back and forth. He gets very mad. He says he's not going to answer any more of my questions, whatever. But like, what I realized having re-listened to this is that his actual explanation was, well, yes, at the beginning, we were committing wire fraud. And I'm just like, oh, he admits it. Like, I forgot to listen to that part when I was so pumped up on adrenaline asking him questions and him refusing to respond that I failed to hear that he goes, well, in 2019 and 2020, you know, FTX didn't have banks. And so we would move money into Alameda and make a ledger account for them on FTX. It was like just a ledger number, which tells me, so you never moved the money over to FTX, period. And you say you did it with the customer's like tacit acceptance, but I don't think a bunch of these customers knew what was actually happening. They were like, oh, wire it to Alameda? I mean, okay. They didn't think about it after that. There was no like, oh, I'm wiring it to Alameda because it's going to show up as a ledger number on FTX. No one was thinking this stuff. Hardly anyone.
I think many of the people wiring the money did have some suspicion that it was less than wholly kosher. When we had Jason Brolon to talk about like the end of online poker in the United States, one of the things he talked about was how for many of these payment processors, you had to do extraordinarily strange things to get your money onto them. You had to like buy a fake diamond necklace and that money would then get deposited in your account. And cryptocurrency has a long history of that same kind of thing with Linden dollars and stuff like that, with money going to Global Trade Solutions AG and then somehow ending up credited to your Bitfinex account, right? That's typical for crypto. It's not typical for things that aren't crypto.
No. So hold on. Here's my pushback on that. My pushback on that is, and I urge everyone to listen, I think that's a really underrated episode actually of ours, is the Jason Brawl episode where we talk about poker's Black Friday. And it's just crazy how many things end up coinciding and commingling between the two industries of cryptocurrency and poker. But I will say this, poker, at least, you know, at least back then, you knew what you were doing was highly gray and or illegal. You knew that this was not something that most people were doing. People who were gambling online, they're pretty aware of the risk because these are people who are like really, really into gambling. And you could argue many of them are probably just addicts of gambling. And I think they're very, very aware of the risk. In the run-up, right, of 2019 and stuff like this, when you had irrational like exuberance, I think you had more retail consumers and more normal people who genuinely were not understand. They were like, wire it to Alameda? I mean, okay. There was no secondary part of that thought. Whereas I think you're right, in poker or maybe even in 2017, 2018, people who were buying cryptocurrencies and stuff were like, oh, I'm wiring this to BAM trading or whatever. Okay, I see what's going on here.
I will concede you get a different audience of consumer when you start like using Giselle and Tom Brady to do your marketing instead of, you know, hey, you used to be able to trade your magic cards here. Now you can trade fake money here. I will concede those are two distinct, mostly non-overlapping audiences.
There you go. That's my main point. And that is part of why I'm like, I don't know. It is interesting. I think banking has a lot of cryptocurrency advocates would argue. The problem is that they can't get the banking. If they could get the banking, then many of the issues that have been seen over the past 5, 6, 7 years would not be seen because they wouldn't be struggling and jumping through hoops to try to find banking. I mean, when we talked about Bitfinex and Tether's early days, you know, if we go back to what, episode 1 and 2, the stuff they were doing to try to keep bank accounts open was insane. I don't even know. I mean, I assume they're still doing similar stuff because they're changing banks every 4 months or whatever. Like, you don't do that if you have a normal operational business. So clearly they're still struggling. Clearly that has not changed. But what to the argument now that if more banks that could do the due diligence on these companies started accepting them, perhaps customers would get hurt less? Kind of, I guess I'm kind of giving the ETF James Seyfarth argument of this, where it's like, why not just accept it so that you can at least track it and ensure that customers aren't hurt?
Well, have you considered the possibility that cryptocurrency companies' financial transactions very often include a disproportionate amount of crime or other risk that banks don't want to carry?
Well, and what's the difference for Coinbase and
Coinbase invests significantly more into like monitoring of their customers than Binance, you know?
Right. So then is the conclusion that in reality, exchanges playing by the rules can get banking, and the ones not playing by the rules are the ones struggling? I mean, is that the real answer here?
I think there's still times that exchanges that are commonly believed to be playing by the rules still have struggled with banking. Coinbase has at times struggled to maintain banking. There've been a couple of close calls where like they switched shortly as they were like getting cut off and things like that. But then as I'm saying this, there's the counter argument that maybe Coinbase isn't as legitimate as people think. That's the SEC's stance on the issue, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Without predicting anything, because I think predicting isn't worth much. But do you think this will get resolved at least temporarily in the near future? Because something is going to happen with Binance. I don't think anyone's sure what that something is going to be. Maybe it's very, very small compared to what people are expecting. Maybe it is the kind of crazy things that people are indeed expecting. Who knows? But do you think, let's say hypothetically, that something happens to Binance and that volume diminishes significantly, do you think that would help legitimize a lot of these other exchanges and their abilities to acquire consistent regular banking services?
No, absolutely not. For the reason that I just said that Binance is 70% of the fucking market. You can't have 70% of the market to be declared criminal and suddenly people are like, oh yes, the remaining 30%, I bet most of that's things we want to have, right? That's not what's going to happen. And like, I will make predictions. I'm going to make predictions right now, a whole series of them. Clip this, people, come at me.
Oh boy.
In a year, it'll be harder for cryptocurrency companies to get a banking account than it is today in the United States. By that point, Sam Bankman-Fried will almost certainly have been tried, and the results of that trial will be known. It is, I think, likely there will be additional indictments of key criminal figures in the cryptocurrency space, and we will have seen additional progress on some of these key civil suits, which affect the vast majority of the actual economic activity in the industry. I do not see a clear path towards an easier ability for cryptocurrency companies to get banking, especially when Congress is teetering on the verge of a government shutdown. The Speaker of the House just got ousted by his own caucus, and there's no real way to bring any kind of like regulatory exclusion or anything that would make it so banks would want to reconsider their stance towards crypto. So there, I'll make predictions. Don't listen to Cass and his fear of predictions. I'll make them all day.
I know you said a lot there, but I do want to quickly say, even if something catastrophic happened to Binance and CZ, like, I don't think that the whole market at Binance is criminal. And I want to be specific here, because I think the whole idea of money laundering, the concept, the wording, is that you're mixing good money with bad money. And the people who are sending you the good money don't know or don't care, sure, or don't realize that it's getting mixed with the bad money.
The better way for me to phrase it would have been, people will react negatively when they find out 70% of the volume was facilitated by a criminal enterprise.
Sure. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I just wanted to clarify that. That's cool. I mean, I think that's it for this, unless you have anything else you want to add.
Well, I just want to tell people to get their deposits into Castcoin Bank as soon as possible. I mean, really, as soon as possible, get your deposits in. Listen, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. And while it is called Castcoin Bank, I do want to make sure that everyone understands it isn't actually a bank. We don't have a banking license. We don't have a charter. Like, we're not even a money services provider. Like, we have no licensing whatsoever, but we do accept donations. That's what we're classifying them as. It's complicated. But obviously your money is safe. I honestly can't think of a safer counterparty than me.
It's Safu, at least. It's Safu.
Well, we have an insurance fund, guys. We do have the Castcoin insurance fund. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And remember, each time you hit the like button or give us a good review, you get 150,000 Castcoin. It's amazing.